Our next guest, Jose Arce, is a local tattoo artist and Tijuana legend. After being deported, he came to the city and turned his dreams into reality by starting off a business and currently promotes the deported lifestyle online through his various social media platforms. Please welcome our guest, Jose Arce. What is it about tattoo artists that, I know some people probably confess their sins to you and shit like that, right? Like, working on something like this and people are pouring out their souls while you're writing on them.
You know what it is? It's like a psychological thing. We're supposed to be like psychologists at the same time as tattoo artists. People, they let out all their flaws right there, man. It's crazy. You hear some stories, man. People, and it seems like people have that urge to bring it out. They just don't know how or when. And for some reason, getting tattooed is very comfortable for them to open up to people, you know?
Is it being forced in one space at one time? You can't fucking move, go anywhere. So this dude is just writing on your skin. So that's...
Maybe that's part of it. Also, I think that you're making pain for them so they identify it as, this motherfucker is making pain for me. I can't do anything to him, but...
So I have to fucking trust him.
So I have to just adjust him and trust him, yes.
What's the longest you've spent on somebody tattooing them?
The longest session that I did was like 19 hours.
Shit. It's like heart surgery.
19 hours on a back piece.
And what's one of the most painful areas that you've experienced on people's bodies?
For people itself, usually one of the worst areas for everybody is like the inside of their arm. In there is one of the most painful areas, the inside of the arm. In my experience, everybody's pain tolerance is different, but in my experience, the head tattoo was the worst one for me by far.
The head tattoo? Like as far as your own experience?
My own experience, yeah. My head tattoo was fucking worst one. That one was painful as fuck. The back of my head. The other ones weren't too bad. The back of my head was by far the worst one, man. That was painful. And then the second worst was the stomach for me.
Now, have you had people come in with you, hard dudes, hardcore fucking dudes, like, yeah, fucking tattoo my chest, and then they chicken out at the middle of it or some shit like that?
How does
that
work? All the time.
How does that work?
It just happens. But you know what's crazy? That it happens, and it happens mostly with men. Because females have more pain tolerance than us. So
that's not an urban legend.
Nah. Women have more pain tolerance, so ellas aguantan más que nosotros.
And there's a whole culture around it now, and a lot of presuppositions about people that have tattoos, people that don't have them. Now that's more acceptable now. You usually hear about people having like just full body tattoos. Or having somebody that writes on their whole body. Like what's the commonality between those types of people? Like, why would somebody want to just cover their skin with art?
I've met some people that have done it for medical purposes. They have skin disorders and things like that. There's a guy named Matt Gunn who's got checkers all over his body. I don't know if you
know.
That's a good friend of mine. So he comes to TJ a lot. He started getting tattooed like that because he's got a medical condition in the skin. So lo ayudaba mucho con el dolor, like the pain and stuff like that. And it would cover certain areas of the skin that looked fucked up for him. And it just escalated from that into turning into what he is now, the fucking monster, you know? But now he uses that as a working tool. His body's like what he lives off of, you know?
And is there any truth to people that, you know, there's always this conversation about, yeah, once you get your first one, you know, it's like an addiction. What do you think that's about? Is it the aspect of doing something painful and kind of risky that modifies your body that then turns into an addiction? Is it pain?
I think that it's more of they were afraid to do it. Once they experience, they know it wasn't too bad, they get it done. And then some people feel off balance. If they get a tattoo, they're like, fuck, I think I want to get another one on this side, you know? Yeah. And it does become an addiction. It's not a... That's just exactly what it becomes.
When I was trying to figure out what I wanted on me, I said, I have to have something simple. And it jumped out right in front of me. La medalla de San Benito, the medal of Saint Benedict. It's used by exorcists to, it's apparently they say that it scares the devil away. My family has this whole, my family's always been hardcore Catholic. Most of my extended family in central Mexico are all Guadalupanos. So they're like hardcore Guadalupanos, and even me, and I dragged myself on my knees a few times to the Basilica.
Oh, you've done it before?
Yeah.
Okay.
And kind of like in the closet, like behind closed doors, Santa Muerte has always been kind of like a family faith as well. When I went to work as a cop in Mexico, this whole aspect of spirituality I thought was like closeted, like I wasn't going to see it. It was supposed to be kind of hidden. And then I found myself facing a bunch of people that had that as a faith, and also a lot of the people that I was working with were also Santa Muerte practitioners. So this whole aspect of like occultism and symbolism and having things for the devil or against the devil on your body and shit like that has always been like a thing. But with my family, it's always been like, hey, cuídate del diablo, like guard yourself against the devil. Like it's a very clear enemy that we have as a family.
Yeah, but even then now, it's that's even more acceptable, you know, when you before it was more like a taboo. Yeah. Hola, Santa Muerte, or
it still is. I mean, depending on where you are, like I'm a public figure. Like I've spoken to Congress a few times. I work for the government as an advisor and shit like that. And when it comes up as a, I don't know, I've spoken about it publicly a few times, and they're like, so wait, you're a Santa Muerte follower? And they're like, yeah, but that's, isn't that cartel stuff?
And it's funny because people think that. People have that thing where they identify with the others because of, I guess, does that come with a certain group of people that were using it before?
So it's old. It's old, but it used to be practiced in secret because the church wasn't too happy about it. The first Santa Muerte shrine was inside of a church in Zacatecas. It was sanctioned by the church. They had this little statue of death. When they would have the recreation of the crucifixion, somebody would walk behind Jesus with a statue of death. And it was a representation of Jesus defeating death. So it was very much kind of intertwined with it. Never satanic, there was none of that around it. It was like a closeted, weird Catholic subgenre, basically.
But it had always been there.
Always been there. It's not even an exclusive thing to Mexico. You go to the Philippines, Cebu City in the Philippines has the same thing, La Santa Muerte, the Holy Death. And it's kind of practiced the same way. The way that you know that the resurrection was true is because Jesus beat death. So death has to be part of the story. So it's like a folk saint. When I started sharing about it in the U.S., everybody's first exposure to it was seeing it on Breaking Bad or Bad Boys. So it had this criminal connotation almost immediately. And even here in the States, the first time it went public, it was usually in cartel raids, and they found a statue of La Santa Muerte somewhere. Right. But while that was going on, a lot of us had Santa Muerte hanging on our neck or at the office, and we would go in the morning to say a prayer at the church, and at night we would go and leave a bottle at the Santa Muerte shrine. You know, it was, we had both, basically. But like everything, it changes. Like everybody's taking it and turning it into something else or just adding their own thing. And I've seen a lot of people having La Santa tattooed on them. Like, have you tattooed any Santa Muertes on people?
Yeah, my girl's a big fan of that.
And is there any way, in a specific way, when they ask you to like draw her?
Everybody gets it the same way, that the way that
the hourglass, the globe, the hourglass. Yeah. So when I learned about it, I was a kid. The first times you saw it publicly were after the year 2000. There was a public altar in Tepito, in Mexico City. That's where I got the strings on my wrist. The lady that runs that altar, Doña Queta, like I met her back in 2004. And she told me what each of these things kind of mean, the symbolisms. La guadaña, protectora, like the scythe to cut negative energies off, right. And also as a symbol.
It's become a big part of human society now. Like a lot of people have it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's pretty normal for everybody to use it. I mean, there is still kind of like a taboo behind it, but...
Yeah. My daughter... My daughter is growing up with it as a faith, but it's still new. And sometimes, you know, she'll mention some of it or wear some of the stuff to school, and I still have to have some conversations around it. But it's funny how people, and I've gotten confronted with some of it, you know, with people, hardcore Christians saying it's satanic, or I don't know, just people with ignorance behind them. I always tell them, like, it's very easy for you to say that to me, but you wouldn't say that to a Native American in the U.S. who's doing a ceremony somewhere. Somehow that's... allowed. That's not allowed, but it's pretty allowed to kind of criticize and or point out some of the aspects of our spirituality as Mexicans, because we just don't have the ability to defend ourselves, I guess, in the ways that some other groups do.
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of our Patreon members for their generous support. It's the only way we can bring some of these amazing people behind the microphone and have some of these amazing Midnight of the Soul conversations for you guys. If you're not already a part of the Patreon community, please consider joining us. We have our giant online training catalog for you guys to have access to, as well as some exclusive Sneak Reaper Industries merch drops for you guys at the Dead Drop tier. I would also like to thank the company Sneak Reaper Industries, one of our main supporters and a company that provides some of the most amazing urbanware, survival specific, and cutlery out there. Your support not only makes this show possible, but also supports some of the charities that we run, including the Fighter's Kitchen out of Puerto Escondido, where we're supporting some up-and-coming fighters under the tutelage of Eddie Farrell. Thank you for your support, and again, please consider joining us on the Patreon. And now back to the show.
Do they have a lot of altars here?
Yeah, there's a few public ones, and there's some not so public ones. The oldest Santa Muerte altar in Tijuana is in La Presa, at the Tijuana Reservoir. It's not really known by a lot of the modern practitioners here in Tijuana because it's the oldest one. It has all the symbolism. It's looking towards the sunset, so that has that. It's kind of in between the water and the sky, so it's on a hillside over the water, so it represents death, I guess. And it's been destroyed and rebuilt 1,000 times.
For real?
So, yeah. So
people have actually gone and destroyed it?
Yeah, Christians, the military. I used to work for a lieutenant colonel that was actually on the podcast who was very against it, and he would send people out to destroy it every chance they get because he related it or associated directly with cartels. He didn't know that a bunch of old ladies were the ones rebuilding it over and over again, because usually women are the ones that keep the altars. So like it was surreal for me going from like working for some of the people that were tearing it down to now rebuilding it a few times myself. That's kind of like a pretty obscure one. There's one on Boulevard 2000, a pretty big one. It's pretty new. And there's some here in El Centro. Most of the witches markets and the psychics.
I've seen a couple of them in those botanicas and things like that, but
they're always around the churches. So one thing people don't understand, like here you have La Catedral here in El Centro, and that's where all the witches markets are around it, because that's how they charge their amulets. They go to church, right? So they have to have a place where they can charge them, like a...
Those botanicas are called witches markets?
Well, that's, you know, it's a nickname. Okay. Mercado de Brujas, yeah, Botanica.
Okay. I never knew the actual translation for that.
And botanicas is, you know, that's what everybody calls them. But, you know, there's most of the ladies that go there, you could tell, you know, they're casting some shit. And they have a few Santa Muerte altars. Yeah, you can tell. They walk in there. The lady walks in there like a gangster, orders a bunch of black candles and very specific herbs. You know she's, you know enough to give her space and respect. You know, don't mess with a bruja. But yeah, Tijuana has always had a history of the occult. Like it's kind of like part of it. And Mexico as a whole, I mean, every single president that has been come into office in Mexico has to get like a nod from El Brujo Mayor, or the high witch, basically. And Mexico has the figure of a high witch. It's like an elected office. So if you want to be president of Mexico, you're going to have to get the nod of the high witch.
You mentioned earlier, you said you didn't want the black solid, or you want me to do the black?
No, just fine like that. I don't need that solid. I don't get a lot of sun in that part of my body, so that's why it's so white.
That's good. It's going to stay pretty.
I already know where your shop is, and now I have somebody who can tattoo me here. So where's your shop at? Where is it located? What street is it?
It's located on Revolution between 2nd and 3rd, closer to 3rd Street, next to La Farmacia Similares. It's right there, right next to it.
Like you're coming to Tijuana, that's a pretty amazing spot to basically get yourself tattooed.
Everybody goes through there.
Yeah, it's a crossroads. Something I heard somebody say about Tijuana, I never kind of thought about it. A friend of mine who's, I don't know what he called him, he's a conjurer, I guess. he's somebody that practices ritual magic and a lot of this occult stuff. He says that Tijuana is a crossroads. So it's a place where a lot of people travel through, but also some people remain. So he says there's something about it. There's some magic here, he says. Like,
and that's pretty true, man. It's crazy. Do you see the diversity of people here? It's crazy. It's a lot of different people from a lot of different places. Armenians, Russians, Colombians, Venezuelans, Haitians.
What I love is the fact that everybody that comes here has a preconceived notion of what this place is, and then it just melts away. We have guests that come in from all over the place here, and one of the first things that me and Avi do is that we take them to get some tacos at a corner somewhere. We have our spots. Me and Avi are taco snobs. We grew up here, so we know the spots. And there's a moment where they're kind of excited and they're like looking around. They're kind of like...
But afraid at the same time.
Yeah. And then And then they're eating tacos somewhere, and they just notice that we're not looking around, that we're relaxed, and they just kind of like, you know, they lower the volume of their fear, and it just becomes a spot.
You can see it. I get that a lot, too, with people that come here. Same thing. They want to eat tacos. The first thing they want to eat, the ones that are the best tacos. And we go on, and they ask questions like that. We're gonna get fucked with, or the cops are gonna take our money and shit like that. No, you're gonna be okay. You know, you're not doing anything wrong. You're gonna be.
You're fine.
If you're out there fucking around, I'll tell you where you could and where you should not.
It's like everywhere. Like, hey, don't go to Skid Row.
Right.
And try and fight the bums there. It's just not a good idea. You know, don't go to the South Side of Chicago. You know, everywhere there's something like that. And I travel across the country. We were in Cleveland last weekend, and we went to a pharmacy that was the deodorant was behind
bulletproof glass.
Yeah, so you can grab it. You had to call somebody over, and me and Avi were like, "We're from Tijuana. We've seen some fucked up shit, but like, you can't even buy deodorant here in Tijuana. Even if you're in a ghetto ass place, nothing is behind glass."
Only the Casa de Cambio.
Only the Casa de Cambio. That's about it. Money exchange places are the only place you're going to find that bulletproof glass. But in the U.S., you get it everywhere. So, like, it's true what we kind of talked about, how this preconceived notion that they warn you about Tijuana, but there's some spots in the U.S. where it's pretty bad.
It is pretty bad, man. It's crazy. I tell the people all the time, and it's like the same questions all the time. You know, the same exact questions. The time about the cops, about the cartels, about if it's true that, like, if you're walking down the street and a taxi pulls up and he honks at you, don't look at him. I mean, they got this thing. You know how the taxis they're honking the time, all the time. So they're like they say that if you look at them, you make eye contact with them, they're gonna follow you, and then you get in that fucking taxi and they'll take you. It's like, nah, man, it's crazy. That's not like that. And this is all thing created by the American people, you know, most of them.
So from LA, from Jalisco to LA to here, for people that you know, have this notion or concept of the deported life, you know. You know, everybody has regrets, and everybody would want things to have ended up differently. But you found yourself here in a home now. Yes. You consider this place home, Tijuana. Is it a good home?
It's a fucking great home. I gotta say, I embrace Tijuana, and I love being here, and I love Tijuana now, you know? And now I understand what my dad used to say, because my dad had nothing but good things to say about Tijuana. You know, I love the place. And like I said, it embraced me. It took me with open arms, and it gave me what I have now. That second opportunity that I needed in my life, I got it here. And one thing I could say is that being deported was the best thing that ever happened to me, because one thing would lead to the other in the States. And, you know, it's hard for you to not end up getting caught up, especially when you grow up in that lifestyle that I grew up in, you know, and a lot of us that are deported grew up in. And I'm not saying that everybody's got deported for the same reasons, but for the most of it, a lot of us that got deported, we were into some shit over there. And that's usually what happens. And there's no, you can't hide behind that shit, you know?
You have an amazing Instagram account where you are not only living living and kind of showing people what that life is like out here, but you're talking to different people, tattoo artists from across the country. You travel a lot. You're trying to educate people on the aspect of Mexico. You know, some places are unsafe. Yes, it has some issues, but you're kind of like reviewing the whole aspect of this lifestyle here. Can you tell people a little bit about your Instagram account?
Yeah, well, what I try to do is, because I see that through my customers and through people that I interact with here in TJ, that everything that's said about Mexico, it's fucked up and it's bad out there in the States. For the most of it is over there. Pero I try to show that other side to people that it's not like that, you know? Like me, I did some criminal activities, and because of that, the consequences of that was me getting deported. I came out here, But being deported wasn't a bad thing. It was the best thing that happened to me. You know, I don't know how where I would have ended up at, or I don't want to speculate that, say like everybody else, oh, you would have been dead or in jail. But I don't, it's not what I wanted. And it, and the most important thing for me here, Beer and TJ, is that it humbled me and put my feet in the ground. And it made me realize that you don't need to have a lot to be happy, and you don't need to have the most expensive things, the most, what everybody's chasing out here, you know, going to the American dream. You go to the American dream, you want to have what everybody else has. You want to see what you see on TV is like, damn, I want that. You know, I had that already. I experienced it, and I wasn't happy with where I was at, you know. And being here made me realize that this is where I needed to be. This is my mission and goal now, is to let people know how things are out here. And I have this platform where I can help people do that, you know. And it's like my shop is pretty much headquarters to a lot of that that's happening. I help out through nonprofit organizations too, you know, help out people. But for the most of it, I let people come through my shop and talk to them. And it's funny how, you know, you see a tough ass gangster out here that got deported, that did 20 years in prison, that did the worst shit of the worst, and he broken down out here because that loneliness of being here, being deported, not having family, breaks you more than being incarcerated with your family member being able to visit you, you know. And I experience that, and I see that. So I try to talk to everybody and let everybody know that, you know, you're not alone out here. There's a lot of us out here, and we can make it happen now, but we just got to conduct ourselves accordingly where we're at. We're out of bounds. This is not our place, but we have to adjust to where we're at and make it work for ourselves and be entwined with everybody else. And it can happen. It's my experience that happened, and I want to show people that, you know, there's a life after you get deported, and it could be a good life. It all depends what you make of it, you know. And he said, le echas ganas y le echas huevos, like we talked earlier. You know, you got to work twice, maybe three times as hard, but you get to a point where you're comfortable and you stop missing that life that you had in the States, because it humbles you, it puts you in the ground where you need to be. Your state of mind changes completely in every aspect. You think different, you work different, you interact different, and you are a different person towards everybody. You treat everybody equally, just like everybody treats you the same, you know? And it's just a matter of getting over the first couple of months of deportation. Once you're beyond that and keep your mind busy, you're going to be okay.
You've created the space for yourself where people, again, you're like an island is what I like to kind of think of it. You know, this island of let me figure it out. And now you figured it out. So you're showing other people how to figure it out for themselves. And I think there's a lot of power in that. The American dream is no longer in America.
Fuck no, now it's the Mexican dream. Baby, everybody's got to come out here.
It's amazing seeing a lot of Americans basically just choosing now Mexico as a home. And you got here under different circumstances. But if people doubt the opportunities there are here of creating a life for yourself, a quality life, and just the welcoming aspect of Tijuana as a city, because it's, yes, it has its dark sides, but it also has a pretty opening and welcoming side as well.
And if you're willing to embrace that and use it for your benefit, it's more than welcome, you know? Just don't fuck it up, you know? Just don't fuck it up. Because like I said, we're out of bounds here. Being in Mexico, to me, has been the real freedom. I've never felt so free in my life, you know? Being in the States, not being able to get a license, not being able to get on a plane, not being able to just travel normal and have a normal driving session, waiting to get pulled over by the cop behind me and shit like that, you know? I don't have that shit no more. I don't need that no more. And this is real freedom. I live freely here. You know, you work, you pay taxes, you do the exact same thing on a different level, on a different scale, and just in a different area, and somewhere where you're more welcome. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Thank you for coming and having this amazing conversation with us. Thank you for the ink.
Oh, thank you,
man. It's probably going to be the first of a few. I know why people get addicted to this, I guess. Where can people find out more about you and the work you're doing here in Tijuana?
They can look me up on Instagram under Spanx52. That's my Instagram account. And then on TikTok, I'm under Deported Life. And my tattoo studio is No Mercy Tattoos. So they just look up No Mercy Tattoos and TJ and my name.
It's the spot to get your ink here in Tijuana. thank you again for coming and sharing your story with us and for the cool link, man.
Oh, thank you, man. My name's Jose Arce. Everybody knows me by Spanky. So you can go on Google, just look up Spanky Tijuana, and a lot of the interviews come up on there. And if anybody needs any help, just a simple phone call, a talk, a message, whatever I can do, I'm here, man.
Thank you for setting up that home for people that are not from here. Thank you for setting up that space for people to get help. And welcome, man. Welcome.
Thank you, man. Deported life in the motherfucking house, baby. Thank you.